Imagine, if you can, a legal system. A system where you could be brutally assaulted and the law offered you absolutely no protection. None. That's the world we're diving into today with State v. Mann. A case so shocking, it became a rallying cry for abolitionists.
It did, and it continues to challenge our understanding of law and justice even to this day.
It really does. So to really get this, we need to set the scene.
Okay.
1829, North Carolina. Slavery is, well, it's the bedrock of society. It's the bedrock of the economy.
Yeah.
We're looking at a world where human beings are legally considered property.
Right.
But even in this brutal system, you'd think there'd be some legal line you couldn't cross, some basic level of protection against just outright cruelty.
Right. You would think so. You would think so. But that's what makes this case so fascinating. It really exposes those assumptions. This case doesn't even involve a slave owner in the traditional sense.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It revolves around John Mann, who was hiring an enslaved woman named Lydia from her owner.
So Lydia is essentially being rented out, like a piece of equipment.
Yes, exactly. But we have to keep in mind she's a human being,
right?
Not a tool. And this detail about hiring versus owning becomes a key factor in how this whole thing unfolds.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Absolutely, yeah. It gets to the heart of the legal arguments that come later. So Lydia, while she was under man's control, she disobeyed him in some way.
Okay.
The sources don't specify what she did.
Okay.
But man then attempted to punish her.
Okay.
And this is where things take a really dark turn.
This is where it gets truly disturbing.
Mm.
As Lydia, as man was punishing her, she tried to escape.
Right.
She ran and man shot her.
He did.
Shot her as she was running away. It's hard to fathom that level of violence being condoned even back then.
It is. You would think so.
Yeah.
And initially, it seemed like justice might actually prevail.
Okay.
Because man was indicted for assault and battery, and a jury found him guilty. They even labeled his actions cruel and disproportionate to whatever Lydia had done.
Wow.
You get this sense that maybe, just maybe, the legal system was recognizing some level of humanity in Lydia.
It feels like a tiny victory for basic human decency.
Yeah.
But of course, there's a twist coming, right?
There is. Mann appealed his conviction, and the case went all the way to the North Carolina Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
Enter Justice Thomas Ruffin.
Okay.
The man who would ultimately decide Lydia's fate.
Justice Ruffin is, he's a complex figure, right?
Yes.
From what I've read, a brilliant legal mind, but also a staunch defender of slavery. How does someone reconcile those two things when faced with a case like this?
Well, that's the central dilemma of State v. Mann.
Okay.
Ruffin grapples with the brutality of what happened. He even admits in his ruling that morally, Mann's actions were reprehensible.
Mm.
But this is where it gets really interesting and really unsettling.
I'm bracing myself when that happens.
Despite his own moral reservations, Ruffin overturns Mann's conviction. What?
Yeah, and his reasoning.
Okay.
He believed that in order to protect the institution of slavery, slave owners or those who hired slaves needed absolute and unchecked power over them.
So he's essentially saying that the law shouldn't interfere with the, the quote-unquote natural order of things, even if that order allows for horrifying violence and oppression. It's chilling to see how legal logic gets used to justify such inhumanity.
It is. It is. And to understand Ruffin's decision, we have to dive into kind of the societal anxieties at the time.
Hmm.
You know, pro-slavery advocates truly believed that any limitations on a slave owner's power would lead to just chaos, the collapse of Southern society as they knew it.
What kind of chaos were they so afraid of? What did they think would happen if slave owners couldn't act with complete impunity?
Well, there was this widespread fear that any legal constraint, even against extreme brutality, would embolden enslaved people, that it would embolden them to rise up against their masters.
Right. Yeah.
They imagined widespread rebellions, economic collapse, ultimately the destruction of their way of life. So fear, plain and simple, was used to justify cruelty.
Right.
That's a pattern we see repeated throughout history, unfortunately.
Exactly. And in Ruffin's mind, upholding the existing power structure, no matter how inhumane, was the only way to ensure order and stability.
Wow.
It's a chilling example of how legal systems can be twisted to serve the interests of, well, those in power.
Yeah.
Even at the expense of basic human rights.
This really makes you think about the role of morality in law.
Yeah.
Can judges truly separate their personal beliefs from how they interpret the law? It seems like in this case, Ruffin's commitment to preserving the institution of slavery really overrode any sense of moral obligation he might have felt towards Lydia.
That's a question that continues to be debated, you know, to this day. What's clear is that in State v. Mann, Russin's personal convictions about slavery really heavily influenced his legal reasoning. It's a stark reminder that the law, even when applied by brilliant minds, can be a tool for upholding deeply unjust systems.
Now, we know the jury initially found Mann guilty. Did that verdict ultimately mean nothing?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
And it leads us to another fascinating layer of this case. The overturning of Mann's conviction was partly due to a technicality. The indictment didn't clearly state that Mann had temporary ownership of Lydia during the hiring period. And this gets to the legal nuances we were talking about earlier.
Ah, so that distinction between hiring and owning comes back into play.
It does, yeah.
But it sounds like there's more to it than just a simple legal loophole.
You're absolutely right. Even with the flawed indictment, Ruffin's ruling went far beyond just addressing that technicality. He used this case as an opportunity to make a sweeping statement about the legal status of enslaved people.
Okay.
And the absolute power of those who controlled their labor.
So he saw this as a chance to solidify the legal framework that underpins slavery. It's a truly disturbing realization.
It is. And it had a profound impact. Yeah. Not just on the legal system, but on society as a whole. But before we delve into kind of the aftermath of State v. Mann, I think it's important to take a closer look at the legal logic behind Ruffin's decision.
Yes. Let's unpack that a bit further, because understanding his rationale is crucial, but understanding how slavery was able to persist for so long in this country.
So at the heart of Ruffin's decision
is
this concept of enslaved people as property,
right?
Not people with rights.
Okay.
You know, in his eyes, they were things that could be bought and sold and, yes, even abused.
That's a hard pill to swallow today.
Yeah.
You know, we understand that all humans have inherent dignity and rights, but back then, Lydia was essentially viewed no differently than livestock.
Exactly. And that distinction, property versus personhood, it's absolutely crucial to understanding State v. Mann.
Okay.
Ruffin believed that criminal law protected people while property law protected things.
So if you damage someone's property, like, say, their fence, you might face civil penalties, like paying for repairs. But you wouldn't be charged with assault, right?
Precisely. Now imagine applying that same logic to a human being.
Yeah.
Horrifying, but that's the legal loophole
that
Ruffin's ruling exploited.
Okay.
By classifying Lydia as property, he effectively shielded Mann from criminal liability for assaulting her.
Does that mean that if you rented a horse and, I don't know, whipped it excessively, you'd only face financial consequences?
Mm.
Not criminal charges.
That's a good analogy. The difference, of course, is that we're talking about a human being, not an animal.
Right.
But in the eyes of the law at that time, Lydia's personhood was completely erased.
So Ruffin's ruling essentially stripped away any legal recourse that Lydia might have had against Mann's violence.
It did.
It's hard to imagine a system where a person could be so utterly powerless.
It's a dark chapter in our legal history, for sure. But it's important to remember that even within this horrific system, there were some, albeit very narrow, limits on a slave owner's power.
Okay, so there were some lines they couldn't cross.
Yes.
Like what?
For example, killing an enslaved person was still a crime.
Yeah.
And owners could sue each other for property damage if, say, one owner injured another owner's slave.
Wow. So the law acknowledged the economic value of enslaved people.
Yes.
But not their fundamental human rights.
Right.
It's such a twisted, contradictory system.
It really is. And it highlights that inherent conflict, at the core of slavery.
Right.
On the one hand, enslaved people were seen as valuable assets.
Right.
Essential to the Southern economy. But on the other hand, they were denied the most basic rights and freedoms.
So this State v. Mann decision, as awful as it was, did it have any unintended consequences? Did it spark any backlash or change?
You're right to ask that, as devastating as this ruling was.
Yeah.
It actually became a major catalyst for the abolitionist movement.
Really? How so?
Think about it.
Okay.
Here you have a case that lays bare the brutality of slavery and the legal system that upheld it.
Yeah.
Abolitionists like Harriet Beecher Stowe, Frederick Douglass, William Lloyd Garrison.
Right.
They saw this as a powerful opportunity to expose the horrors of slavery to a wider audience.
So they used this case to further their cause.
Absolutely. Stowe, for example, directly cites State v. Mann in her novel Dread, A Tale of the Great Dismal Swamp.
Wow.
She uses it as a stark example of the legal system's complicity in slavery's cruelty. And Douglas, in his speeches and writings, often referenced the case to highlight the hypocrisy of a nation that claimed to value freedom while simultaneously upholding the institution of slavery.
It's amazing to think that a case intended to solidify the legal foundation of slavery actually ended up helping to dismantle it. Sometimes the law has a way of backfiring on those who try to use it for oppressive purposes.
It's true. State v. Mann became a rallying cry for abolitionists, a symbol of everything that was wrong with slavery and the legal system that supported it. And it helped to galvanize public opinion against slavery, ultimately contributing to its demise.
It's a reminder that legal precedents, even those rooted in injustice,
can be challenged and overturned. It's a testament to the power of persistent activism and the enduring belief in human rights.
It also serves as a cautionary tale. It reminds us we can't take legal protections for granted. The fight for justice is an ongoing process, and we must remain vigilant in safeguarding those rights for everyone.
You know what strikes me about this case?
Yeah.
Is that it's not just a historical curiosity. The underlying issues, power, prejudice, and the struggle for equality are still relevant today. It's almost like this case, as horrifying as it is, it opened up a space for a more critical conversation about the legal contradictions of slavery.
Right, yeah.
Are there other examples from that time that highlight these inconsistencies?
There are. Some are quite striking in how they contrast with State v. Mann. Take the case of State v. Hall, also decided in North Carolina in 1829.
Okay.
In this case, a white man assaulted an enslaved person who belonged to someone else.
Okay.
And he was actually found guilty.
Wait, so let me get this straight. It was illegal for a stranger to harm an enslaved person, but perfectly legal for the person who controlled their labor, like in Mann's case, to inflict violence.
That's the twisted logic we're talking about.
Yeah.
The law prioritized the property rights of slave owners above the basic human rights of enslaved people.
It's a stark example of how the law can protect certain groups while simultaneously denying those same protections to others.
Yeah.
These cases are so deeply unsettling, but it's precisely because they're unsettling that we need to keep grappling with them. You know, we need to understand how legal systems can be complicit in perpetuating injustice.
I agree. State v. Mann is a potent reminder that the law isn't always a neutral arbiter of justice. It can be a tool for oppression just as easily as it can be a tool for liberation.
So what can we learn from all of this? What are the key takeaways for us today as we strive to create more just and equitable society?
Well, for me, one of the most important takeaways is the need for constant vigilance.
Okay.
You know, we must be aware of how power dynamics can shape legal systems.
Right. And how those systems can be used to marginalize certain groups.
Yeah.
We can't become complacent.
Yeah.
Assuming that progress is inevitable.
And we can't shy away from confronting the difficult truths about our history. Cases like State v. Mann force us to reckon with the legacy of slavery and its lasting impact on our legal and social structures. We have to understand where we've been to know where we're going.
Absolutely. It's also a call to action. We have a responsibility to use our voices and our actions to challenge injustice wherever we see it, whether it's advocating for legal reform, educating ourselves and others, or simply speaking out against prejudice and discrimination. We all have a role to play in building a better future.
This entire deep dive has really left me with more questions than answers. If you were a lawyer arguing against Ruffin's ruling, what legal principles could you have used to defend Lydia's humanity and her right to be free from violence? What arguments could have been made to challenge the very foundation of slavery as a legal institution? It's hard to even know where to begin. That's such an important question to ponder. It challenges us to think critically and creatively about how we can use the law to create a world where everyone is treated with dignity and respect, regardless of their race, their social status, or their economic circumstances. A world where cases like State v. Mann would be unthinkable. A relic of a truly barbaric past.
It's a heavy topic, but it's an essential conversation to have. State v. Mann is a stark reminder that the fight for justice is ongoing. It's a fight that requires us to be informed, engaged, and committed to creating a world where the law truly serves the interests of all people.